All right, everybody, look, I told you before when I came back this season, I was going to bring in some interesting people, and I've done that, an unending streak of people that I enjoy, people I respect, people I dig, and it has continued today. I'm bringing on someone, a very talented person, singer, songwriter, now friend of the show, Miss Carmen Miller.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Doing quite well, doing quite well. You know what the funny thing is?
Technically,
you had me on your podcast when you did a first.
Yes, yes. Ages ago. It's been forever ago, it seems like.
Yeah, that was a long time ago because, well, just to show you how long ago it was, at the time, I didn't know you were a singer.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
That's how ago it was.
that show is really like political, and it was about relationships and things like that. So we got real topical. I didn't really get a chance to do much showcasing of the music aspect. So yeah.
Yeah, because that was an interesting thing because I started listening to the show. I forgot how I got on the show. I don't even remember.
I think it was Daryl had a bunch of like pundits. I think it was a lot of topical stuff, lots of political stuff, lots of social stuff. So mm-hmm. I think it was probably some of that, And you guys had like a really interesting show, and I think that it was kind of like marrying the aspects of those different genres in that, as far as getting everybody doing black podcasting, put together.
mm-hmm. And then I had Daryl on, and I was like, I've got to get Miss Miller on this program.
You had Daryl on before me? Hold on.
Yeah. Hold on. Well, his check cleared first.
wait. You know what? I'm a little sad now. I feel a little slighted.
Yeah, but see, we already in, and I already like you better than I like him, so it's cool.
You should. Yeah, I guess I'm the palate cleanser.
That's what I'm saying. It's the podcast sorbet.
Yes.
Now, this is something that I'm wondering because we are both live performers. You being a singer, me being a comedian, actor, and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Now, we have both been, how can I put this in the most polite way, kicked in the teeth this last year.
Yes. Oh, this last year has been, 2020 was, it was an eye-opener to those of us who make our bones as far as, live performances and things like that. It was a rough year. I've had to really kind of like reinvent myself and really like kind of come up with some real innovative ways to grind. Early on, everybody was doing the Zoom thing, and then that got really old really quickly. Mm. And then you have to find new ways to really like connect with people because attention spans are short and people's nerves are even shorter. I find that, I've gained ground on TikTok. I've gained ground on Instagram, with a lot of the quick connections, the shorter videos and things like that. My Spotify is picking up, the streaming platforms are picking up, but as far as the performing, it was tough. It was really tough. And it's streaming performing. It's just not the same as the energy you get from having the crowd right there with you, because we feed on that. You feed on that energy.
Yeah, it's kind of weird getting laughs 3 weeks after I told the joke.
right. Or like the when you're on live streaming, the people hitting the little hearts and things like that, it's just not the same as actual applause, and that you can't replicate that energy. You just can't.
I was saying to somebody before, you know, like everybody, like I remember when, like I have a 32-inch TV in front of me right now, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm actually mm-hmm. watching the, I'm as we're recording this, I'm watching the waveforms of our voices on the screen.
Yeah.
And I remember when that was a big deal to have one of those. I got this for $100 and people are now watching movies on Netflix and at home.
Yeah.
And it's not the same as being in a theater with 700
people. No. And I think that we've lost so much when it comes to the human connection. I think that there is something to be said for the gathering of people in terms of the energy in a room, especially with a live performance or even a theatrical experience. Mm-hmm. I remember if you've ever seen the video of the premiere of Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Where you know what I'm talking about? The scene where they all come in and Falcon it tells Cap on your left and everybody starts to applaud and that, you know? And he goes, Avengers assemble when everybody comes out and then the whole room erupts, right?
Yeah.
So that is like that feeling. You can't get that in your living room by yourself. I mean, it's not the same. And even with Zoom and things like that, I love the technology. I love the fact that it's allowed us to continue. You know, we've been able to continue in our way. You know, but it's just. As a performer, this is something that people say. People say they do it for the love. People say that they do it, you know, because they love. As if you're a real artist, if you're a real performer, you have to do it for the love because it's the connection with the room. It's the connection with the people in the room. Okay.
Yeah.
And I miss that. I crave that. Like, it is. It's like a drug. It really is. It is like a drug. And I'm gonna tell you, 2020, I was in withdrawal. Big time.
Yes. I know the feeling.
I am telling you. On a Friday night or Friday, Saturday night where I knew I should be on somebody's stage, you know what I mean? I'm mm-hmm. sitting here like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life right now?
Because you have, I mean, just like anything else, human beings are creatures of habit. And and especially if you've been, like, I've been doing comedy for 3 decades, you've been singing for a while, you know, you probably since you were a kid, I'm assuming, right?
Since I was 4 years old. I have and actually that's my imprint. That's my publishing company since I was 4 LLC.
So we both have decades in.
Yeah. I started out in Sunshine Choir, at First Glory Baptist Church in Detroit, Michigan. I was 4 years old.
so you knew since, that's an interesting thing is when you find somebody that discovers their talent really, really early.
You know, and I'm going to tell you what, it was the connection, it was the applause, it was knowing that I did something with my voice that connected with people, that mm-hmm. showed me love, that felt like love, you know? And I didn't want to do anything else.
Yeah, you really get love in the church.
I'm telling you. I mean, you know, and when they love you, ooh, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you what else. I don't ever get nervous anywhere else except singing in church. I promise you.
Yeah.
I've been in arenas. Mm-hmm. I've been in arenas. And I don't get nervous singing anywhere else but in church. And I don't care whose church it is. I get nervous in church. That's the only place I get nervous.
Because, I think performers all have that one place where it's real to them. I mean, where it's mm-hmm. like, you know the scrutiny. I mean, it's not scrutiny like they want you to fail, but you know they got
the
double eye on you. Like, you better tear it up.
You better
get in there, Jack.
You know what? It's also something else for me. It's the reverence for it. You know, mm-hmm. for what it is that I'm singing when I'm there. It's the reverence for the material. It is the sacredness of what it is. You know what I mean? Because I do consider it a gift. I don't consider it just a talent. I consider it a gift. And just like it's given, it can be taken away. And so, like, you know, for me, that is, if I am sharing my gift in that way, I gotta be serious about it. That's when it's serious. You know what I mean?
Was there somebody else that had the singing ability, or did they just notice it in you and say, get up there?
My mother sang all my life. My mother was a singer, and she never pushed me like that, but she recognized it in me and she nurtured it. And she was my biggest supporter, like, ever. Mm-hmm. She died when I was 18. Mm-hmm. And, I never wanted to disappoint, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've always sang because, you know, I can hear her in me. When I sing, I hear her voice. I don't hear my own anymore. I hear her voice.
Now, do you sound like her when you sing?
That's okay. The only time. That's what I mean. I hear, I don't remember like what my mom sounded like talking, but I remember what she sounded like singing.
And I
sound like that. And that's why I can sing now.
Yeah. It's like you get to visit her every time a song comes.
Yeah. And like her song, the song she loved, those are the ones that really take me there. You know what I mean? Like, I do a lot of covers in my shows, and like a lot of the old Chaka Khan, a lot of the old Anita Baker, and those were like the songs she really loved. Like, so.
And if you're singing those.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Listen, my mother was that. She was that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
As a matter of fact, my mom she was like a background singer back in the day. Like, they called them the Jackson Girls. My mother, my Aunt Mabel, and my Aunt Pam, they used to sing like background for like different artists or whatever. And not like, you know, they didn't record, but like if they would come to town or whatever, they would sing background or whatnot. They called them the Jackson Girls up in Detroit. And, you know, they did all right. But yeah, so that was a thing.
Yeah.
That was a thing.
As you know.
No, yes.
If you're a black singer and those songs come on.
if you are chunk, you have to hit it right. You gotta hit it right.
Because they will.
especially when you go to Detroit. Okay?
Oh God.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
You can almost hear the before when the song starts.
Let me tell you what. Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. Detroit and Philadelphia are the hardest places to impress anyone. They're not impressed by anything. Nothing impresses them.
Really?
Nothing. Literally nothing.
Carmen, I just want to let you know something right now, very, very important. Friend S. Anthony Thomas was born and raised in
nothing impresses you.
Philadelphia.
Nothing impresses you. I know that. I'm from Detroit. Nothing impresses me.
That's the funny thing. Yeah.
Literally, nothing impresses you. You have to be, you got to be Michael Jackson and Prince on fire, twirling a firecracker.
Yeah, you better be able to do a split and moonwalk at the same time while playing the piano and guitar.
I'm just saying, right? nothing impresses you until somebody hits all the right notes doing the right thing. And then it's like, oh, okay, you're doing a little something there.
And I'm going to say something too. You literally validated something a couple of my earlier guests said.
What?
Because I said to a friend of mine, we've known each other 30 something years. I said, I started doing comedy in Philadelphia. I had never been anyplace else. So I didn't know anything other than Philadelphia audiences, which means basically you got about 5 seconds to impress.
That's it.
Anyplace else, it's easy because they'll give you 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes.
Oh my God.
Right?
It's like this. Okay. So I live in Ohio right now. And here, I could be freaking Whitney Houston. Okay. But in Detroit, it's like, okay, girl, next. Where my food?
Yeah, like, and it's a good, and that's the funny thing about it. In the beginning, I used to call it taking a beating. When you're learning your craft in a really tough city, but exactly. It's a good thing because nothing phases you after that.
Exactly. And when you win that audience, mm-hmm. you know you can do anything. You feel like you can do anything, like you can conquer anything. Rejection in any other market doesn't faze you in the same way because you can go home and get re-energized by your people. You know what I mean?
Your home becomes your briar patch.
That's it. And like, I go, that right there is like, you know, I've been to this circuit that I play in Detroit to the point where it's like that right there is my testing ground for all the new material, anything that I want to put out or anything that I think might work or anything that I think won't work. You know, I'll test it in that area because I play a lot of different kinds of music and a lot of different genres. So there's a few different types of clubs that I play. And get this. Okay. So just, and you can kind of validate me about Philly because Detroit is this way. It doesn't matter what kind of audience it is. They all are that way. Okay. Literally. Like, they all are that way. I don't care what kind of audience it is. I don't care if it's the white, black, purple, whatever. They all are that way. It's like, impress me. Okay.
Yeah. The blue collar towns are like, look, I work in a factory for 12 hours.
This ticket
costs me 3 hours work. You understand?
Exactly. Be magical. Hurry. Hurry. Hurry up and be magical. You know? Do it.
But when they like you, when they love
they
you.
They like you.
It's over.
So like, that's it. So I'll go to the Token and I'll do a rock show. Okay. I'll go to Fishbones and I'll do my R&B or jazz, you know. I'll go to Cliff Bell's and do the Neo Soul, that kind of thing. So I have different places where I'll try out the material, and if it works, it works. You know what I'm saying? And so
Do you have a musical genre that, I mean, I know you sing a lot of different styles that I know, that I've heard. Do you have one that you feel obviously you're familiar with Prince, obviously. Everybody is. And we know he plays all these instruments.
Absolutely.
At a high level. We know this. But we also know we know what his favorite instrument is. We know lead guitar. He can play all the other ones, but his favorite instrument, obviously, is the lead guitar. That's why we got all those classic singles. Do you have a genre, knowing you can do them all, where you're going, I'm home?
If I never could sing in any other genre again and I could only choose one lane, I would be a rock star.
You like the rock music?
Yes, I do.
You like the rock.
And specifically, classic rock, heavy metal.
You know, that was actually my next question, because you know how weird it is Like when I this is so weird. When I was in my 20s, I would be driving down the street playing. Now, obviously, I played the stuff I always play, Prince and all that kind of stuff, Michael Jackson and all that. But then the classic rock would come on and I'd still be playing it, and people would look at me like, the hell are you doing?
I was that kid. So I just have to tell people I'm equal parts Whitney Houston and Freddie Mercury. So, yeah.
Oh, Freddie Mercury. Uh-oh.
So that's kind of where I live, and it's been a balancing act the whole time. This past year, I've written more in the R&B world. I've written more. I actually started exploring house music, going way back to my Detroit roots. Mm-hmm. I actually started exploring house music and doing. I did a project with DJ Wensky. German DJ who's here in Ohio, got stuck here in Ohio over COVID.
Yeah.
And so we worked together and put together a nice little project. And I did a lot of R&B over the last year, but I'm looking at doing, along with this project that I did put out a single. That I'm going to be releasing. It's more of a, like an anthem rock kind of song. It's like a ballad, you know, one of the big old school ballads.
Hey, so, like the, Steve Perry type stuff.
Yeah. It's called Victorious and I'm releasing it in June. So you've got exclusive on that.
That is an interesting thing, because when you listen to some of the other people that I know that do music, they lock in. They grab one thing and they're going.
Yeah, look. I know. And you know what? Everybody always said, you know, find a lane and stay there. Find a lane and stay there. And that was the conventional wisdom all along when the music business was a singular business. But now it's splintered into so many different factions with the internet and the advent of, you know, this, you know, cyber society that we live in, that you don't have to be just one thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so many of our celebrities or so many of the personalities and the people that we really, you know, look up to or really like enjoy, they do a number of different things. If you look at a Beyonce or you look at a Gaga or you look at all these different artists that are really like making it happen, none of them are doing one single thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, I know this is a weird way to say it, and I probably shouldn't say it this way. I used to say you kind of had, like I said, if I was a singer, and I'm not, if I was a singer, and if you heard me singing, you would know I am not. you know, if I was that, I literally, in the beginning, my first album would have 4 or 5 different styles on my first album. Because audiences audiences have to be trained, but it's not training, because that has a negative connotation, like you're talking about a dog or something. I think audiences have to be made aware of the fact early that you do more than one thing, because let's be honest, they still call Madonna material girl. She's in her 60s.
I mean, and she's done every single thing under the sun. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because, like, I can't even really relate to the old material girl Madonna at this point. You know what I'm saying? And that is. But you're always known by the first thing that breaks. You're always known by the first thing that really pops. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, remember, Prince put out in his lifetime, like 50-something albums, okay?
Yeah.
And they call him his Purple Badness. Purple Rain was his 6th album.
Purple Rain happened 30-some-odd years ago, you know, okay? And it's like, you know, they locked him to the first thing that really jumped off for him. But that's the thing. And that's, for me, if I'm going to be known for something, I want to be known for not just the versatility, but I want to be known for whatever it is that gives people that moment for them. And mm-hmm. it's going to be different for everybody.
It absolutely
will be different for everybody.
It's a different.
And I know that.
Yeah, everybody. See, the thing, there's two relationships that I find that audiences tend to have, especially if you're a live performer, especially if you're good at it consistently. Like if they come to see you a bunch of times and you never fail them, you always bring it, you always rip the game. There's two relationships they have with you. The first one is the collective relationship, because it's all about a party. Everybody's there. They want to look around and see everybody having a great time.
Right.
And then there's that relationship they have with you.
Yes. And that, you know what? And it's funny that you say that, because after performing in live, this will probably be, let's see, oh my goodness. I want to say 20 years professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can say that without being, you know, any self-conscious at all about it. Yes, I've paid my dues, and no, it's not like about, you know, the big fame type deal or whatever, but I have very loyal people, a very loyal following, and I really appreciate them.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it is, I know that the people that come see me on a regular basis, they come because, and this is the way I look at it. You work all week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for maybe 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours out of a week, I give them the best time.
Mm-hmm.
I give them like a vacation from all of the bullshit that they go through. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I don't know what your rating is for the show.
Oh, you can, Carmen, it's no problem. You can say that shit.
Sorry. Okay. But I try to give them a vacation from whatever it is that they're going through during mm-hmm. that week. So that right there, it's not about me. And like the performance itself is never about me. It's about giving them an experience or giving them something that can take them away.
You know what I used to say? I told somebody this before. And you understand it, and I think it's a thing that live performers get, you know what I mean, singers, actors, comics. It's an experience, and nobody is like, when people come to physically see you, like they'll listen to your music, they'll listen to my stuff, and they come. You're a real human being now,
right?
The people that come to see you, because if you notice, the acts that are still selling out basketball stadiums that don't sell records like they used to, people are like, I am buying a record. I mean, I'll buy it. You know, I mean, if you have a hardcore fan, your hardcore fans will buy it, but they want to be in a room with you.
Let's be real. Let's call it what it is. And I'm going to use the best example I've ever seen in my life. Frankie Beverly and Maze have not put out an album in 40 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Come now. But every single time they're at Shane Park, it is sold out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because every old man, everybody is going to come in their linen short sets. They're going to come in their sundresses and their big hats. And they're going to have a good time because they know exactly what they're getting. And they know that what it feels like, and they want to feel like that again. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I know.
So
that
right there, it's a callback to a feeling, you know? So that is like, for me, I try so hard, like, on the stage to give people a recall to that feeling that makes it like, you know, When I say it's a vacation, it is.
Yes, indeed.
It's a good time.
It's different now. It's different now for us because This is something that happened to me. Well, my nephews are grown men now, but when they were younger, I was explaining to them how much I loved as a teenager to go into record stores.
Oh,
you know, and I'm gonna go. Yeah.
Oh my God! Wait! You said record stores. Yes.
I said record stores. Now, granted.
Oh my God!
Now, technically. Technically, no. There weren't any records in there. It was CDs and cassettes.
No. You said record store. I'm gonna hold you to record store. I'm gonna let you just have that. And I'm gonna tell you why. Because my kids have never in their lifetime ever seen a record store.
Mm.
Ever.
These boys didn't either.
Ever. They're like, huh? What?
These little knuckleheads literally were sitting at my table eating food I made for them.
So good. I'm so glad you said that.
Food I made for them, right? And I'm sitting there looking. I almost wanted to pick up the phone and tell my sister to come get their little punk asses and take them out of here.
When I say album, they think I'm talking about picture books.
Oh,
it hurts my feelings.
They literally laughed me out of my own dining room, down the steps, and into the basement while I was doing laundry. Wait a minute. Oh, wait, Uncle, hold a minute, Uncle. Hold a minute, Jose. Oh, I'm sorry. Their voices weren't that deep yet. Jose.
You had to go to the store. It took my niece the other day to tell me about the 1900s. Oh, dear. No, that right there.
But you know what's hilarious, though? The hilarious thing is, when I was their age, I had to literally, when I was doing my shows, I would have to take a book bag or a briefcase with me with batteries and CDs. And you know how CDs literally will put a straw in a battery and just drink it.
Yes. But remember when you thought that having the Walkman, CD Walkman,
was
the height of technology?
Because it was.
I just turned 1,000 years old while we were talking. I'm sorry.
Do you remember when they came out with the anti-skip version?
You keep saying remember, and then I get older every time you say it.
In my day.
Every time you say it, I get older. I do.
I remember going to the store and buying one with the anti-skip.
100% gonna need dentures tomorrow. I'm so serious.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get some of that denture grip and some of that.
I can't even deal right now.
Get them thick glasses.
Oh my God.
But what was it like for you as a singer musician? I know it was a great experience for me to be in a record store, because let's be honest. The catalyst to me going into the record store was my yearly Prince album.
I'm going to tell you. Okay, so my introduction to falling in love with performing by Carmen L. Miller. This is going to sound so weird, but I was 11, and I went to my first concert, and it was Duran Duran. At Joe Louis Arena, and I got the whole experience. Like, I got there early with my cousin, and we were, you know, like waiting for them, the limo to pull in and all of that stuff. It was the whole, like, you know, British invasion experience, and it was like, you know, all the screaming and all of that. Watched them, you know, load in and all of that good stuff. Got into the concert. Smashed our way down to the front, and it was an amazing show. I still follow them to this day. Anytime they're anywhere near me, I will go see them. I have I've actually traveled to go see them. They're incredible to this day. One of the best bands I've ever seen live.
And to the third of my audience, that's between 18 and 34. Duran Duran is a band from the 80s, and they were humongous.
And they still are, to be honest.
They're what we were talking about. People that don't move albums like they used to, but when they show up, basketball stadium is full.
You know?
Sing Rio! Rio!
Exactly. And so I'm 11 years old. And there was a moment, and it was Save a Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the name of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally felt like the entire world was in love.
Mm-hmm.
And they Simon stopped singing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just playing the music, and the entire crowd was singing. And it was that thing that happened where there's just this synergy, this kind of feeling. And it was pure magic. And I had to become a part of that. And that was my first real experience. And that was when I became a fan. So from 11 years old to like right now, I have bought everything they've ever put out.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they've ever done, solo projects, side projects, whatever. I've bought everything. Books, TV, the whole nine.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
I know that feeling.
I am that super fan. I'm a lifelong Durandy.
Yeah. Just like I'm a lifelong Prince-o-file.
Yes. I'm a novice Prince-o-file. I do collect, but not like my Duran stuff. I'm a Duran. I'm pure D Duran. My husband hates it because
that's what I was gonna ask you.
Yeah. I've got a room. Mm. It's not pretty.
Oh, do you have Simon Le Bon on the wall?
No, I'm John Taylor. I love the bass.
Oh, okay. Well, that's different. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, I break for bass players. That's my jam. That's my thing.
So
he's badass.
Let's talk about Mr. Now.
Yes.
How in the world? It's now he's a civilian to entertainment. Is that right?
Yes, he's a complete civilian to entertainment. Yeah, and we're like, I don't know, we're like peanut butter and jelly. We are like total opposites. He's a sport guy. Yeah, he's like a jock. I don't know.
Because that's the thing. It's like sometimes you get two performers together, and it's like really weird because they're always. Yeah. I always think it's got to be the quote normal one unquote.
He is totally the normal one. He's totally the normal one. He really is. And as a matter of fact, we are yin and yang, and that's a good thing. He is like I tend to be very extroverted on the scene, like when I'm out performing, but in our day to day life, I'm an introvert for the most part, which is weird. And he is kind of the opposite. So in our day to day life, he's more of a social butterfly. Whereas when we're out on the scene, he's more like security.
It's always good to have, like you said, yin and yang, because I've seen the two extroverts together.
It's like they're in competition. It would seem like competition. He's never in competition with me. We work well together. And we have for 30 years. I met him my first day of high school.
So that's the thing that's really, really cool is this is like when you found out that you were a singer and entertainer at four, and the simple fact that you find the thing early, it solves so many problems.
You have no idea. Like, no, I am a total nester. Like, for real, for real. Like, I latch on to things. I'm a total nester. Like, when I get something good, I don't let it go. You know.
Okay, I'm going to need to ask you this. Is this poor man tied to a chair in the basement right now?
Not right now. No.
Okay. Oh, that's right. It's only Wednesday.
I do allow him outing for employment.
You're done working. Back to the basement, damn it.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you know, we have our things.
Mm-hmm. Since you ate Thursday, that's enough.
I'm just saying. Mm-hmm.
Guilty.
It's not a weekend yet. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm.
So what about the kids?
We are empty nesters now, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's grown and gone.
Yeah, I mean, but you're the only entertainer in this family unit.
No, they all love music. All my kids love music. All my kids, as a matter of fact, my oldest produced one of the songs that's going on my new album.
Yeah.
All my kids are entertainers. All of them. Like, every last one of them. Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy because, here's the thing. My husband, he's 6'5", okay? Mm-hmm. Play basketball, the whole nine, coach, whole nine. We have two boys and a girl. He thought for sure one of these kids would play ball. Well, my daughter did play ball in college, all the way up through college, mm-hmm. which was cool. But even she is a rapper. Serious.
You got all of them.
but they did it on their own. I never even had a clue. For real. Like, until they were, like, of age or growing up, like, older. I never had a clue that that's what they wanted to do. I mean, as a matter of fact, my middle kid hid it from me that he even wanted to do music because I feel like he thought that, you know, I would frown on it or in some way or whatever. But no, I love it. They're very talented. I support it. I retweet and repost all their stuff on my TikTok and on my Instagram. My oldest is an illustrator as well, amillustrator.com, amillustrator.com. You can also find his music at P3P Tone. Yep. Then my daughter is Havoc Baby. Mm-hmm. And then my middle son is Ace. You can find his music. Hold on. Let me get this right because I don't want to get it wrong.
Listen, you, mom.
He is Ace Boogie or Goddamn Ace, GXD Damn Ace. On any of the music platforms. So you can please find him and find my kids. They are all super talented. He's got a song, Stay Down, that I absolutely love. Yeah. So they are all, like, out there.
I'm literally just sitting here thinking about your husband. And you said, how many kids did you have? You said, yeah, four, three?
We have three kids.
Three kids. And he's sitting there going, I can't get one.
Not even one. My daughter played, like I said, she played through college. So yeah, she played for Detroit Mercy. And he went to all the games and yeah, so
here's the thing.
Here's
the competition. Okay, here's the competition. You got two things. You got be like me or look like me.
They all look like him. They all do. All of them look like him. Okay. Nobody looks like me. Like, literally, no one looks like me. And this is why I say These are my husband's first wife's children. I treat them like they're mine.
Okay, well, see that. See, I just want to say, brother, if you're listening to me right now, it's a tie, bro, because you got the look. At least they look like you.
He says they are. You know what? And I love them like they're mine. I do.
Because I'm telling you, I've seen friends of mine who both had distinctive looks.
Yeah.
Good looking people, but yeah. It's like, you know,
seriously.
Like, you know, you when their siblings walk in the room, it's like, that's my sister. And I'm going, really? It is? You know, one of those
families. They all have very strong Miller genes. And yeah. they're very strong Miller genes.
And the thing is, yeah, because these two, when they had their kids, they had, four now. And it was almost like a drum roll when the babies were born to find out who they were going to look like.
Oh, God.
And it was 2-2.
Oh.
2-2. They split, the kids split personalities between parents. They split looks between the parents. And I'm sitting there going, I know you're 50, but it's time for a tiebreaker.
Nah. That was it. This is what I get the talent. He gets the look. Because I'm serious. All my kids are over 6 feet. All of them. I'm the shortest person in my family. And
okay,
I'm like,
what are you,
five,
a little
five.
Tiny person?
I've been looking up at my kids since they were like 12, seriously. So, like, nah.
Yeah, that's my sister. Little tiny person. And my nephew's 6 feet tall.
Right. So, it's bad. But they all look like him, and they all got talent. So, you know.
You know what? Earlier in the show, you said, and I wanted to, and I caught that. But I wanted to touch on that, but I wanted to hear what you were saying right after that. But I wanted to jump back to that really quickly. Zoom shows.
Oh, yeah. I did a few of those. I did quite a few of them. And like the ones on Facebook, did some Facebook Live, did that. It was really just trying to find a way to connect with the audiences or whatever, you know, kind of like doing live performances via, you know, out of my home, really. And, you know, doing like the little karaoke at the crib is what I would call it. Mm-hmm. And we'd just host some performances. And I wanted to just find a way to make sure that I was still staying in touch with my audience, still being out there, you know, still finding ways to just be visible. Because as you know, people forget, people's attention span is very short. And they, you know, once you're out of sight, you're out of mind, you know. And now with things opening back up, it's very tough to really get booked again because, everybody's hustling for the same five gigs because all of the spots that we loved have closed down due to COVID.
Yeah, it's weird because when you're in without this little break, everything kind of falls into place. You know, you find your little groove and you get booked to this place and get booked to that place, but everyone's kind of spread out. Now it's like everyone's, you know, it's probably going to look like, because I know when I start performing again, when everything's cleaned up and I get my second shot, I know it's going to look like one of those bridal, when they sell the wedding dresses.
Oh yeah, it is. It really is, and that's the run for musicians is like happening right now because right now we're at the place where people are booking their summer fall shows, or you know, and it's really hectic because you know without knowing who is still up and running, you know, because there's a lot of the mom and pop little bars and stuff that have closed down and that, and then a lot of the festivals aren't happening anymore. So those were like the bread and butter gigs for a lot of us, you know.
For a lot of us too.
Yeah. So it's very hard. Oh, for example. Okay. So for example. Funny Bones, Fat Fish Blue. I used to play Fat Fish Blue, the club, mm-hmm. on a regular basis. Now they turned the club into a barcade. So they don't do bands anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. But, you know, they still have a Funny Bone, but the club itself, the Fat Fish Blue side, is a barcade, so there's no more bands.
Ew.
Yeah. So that's work that's dried up. And it's just that kind of thing that we're running into because people are trying, well, the bars and that are trying to run leaner and meaner in terms of their business model. And it feels like they've abandoned us when, for a long time, we had been getting them a piece of their business, right? Yeah.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the double-edged sword of where we are with COVID now.
I'm just wondering, because I think that in many cases, it'll start, because after a while, people, you know, it's like things, just like, you know, when a person gets a certain amount of money, like it's like that study where they say where after you get to a certain level of income, your happiness doesn't go up. And I think that when it comes to a certain situation with the clubs where they're going, yeah, this is cool and everything, but I still rather have people singing in there.
That's the thing that I think has been lost in translation. You'll find that your audience prefers a live band because of the connection to the band.
Mm-hmm.
They're people that come to see the band because of their connection to the band. They don't come just to be out. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
For a time, you're going to have the people who just want to be out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then after that becomes the norm again, you're going to have people who miss live bands. You're going to have people who miss the entertainment, who miss the connection to the people who they went to see. And it's really that part that I think that they're being short-sighted about.
Yeah, I mean, you just, because I remember some clubs that, you know, they had performers there, and then they had a couple of nights where they did karaoke or some crap like that, right? And they're like, hey, we're doing pretty good. And that dies out really quickly.
It's not the same.
You see, and people who can actually sing versus people who can absolutely not sing.
and I'll give you some examples of the entertainment aspect. Mm-hmm. Even with that, I was hosting lip-sync battles.
Mm-hmm.
I was hosting, you know, karaoke as well. I mean, so you're losing a lot of that. You're losing a lot of the entertainment as far as like the actual physical value, you know, because mm-hmm. that's not happening anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing, and there's something to be said for live physical entertainment, just all around, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you are putting together your songs now, because
mm-hmm.
obviously COVID had you home, so I'm assuming you wrote 9,000 songs.
Oh my God, I've got two albums on deck. I've got a house project. Like I was saying, I've got a that house project on deck that I've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably there's probably club songs on that, and then I've got my it's more of a contemporary like pop / R&B type album that I'm working on, and that's probably about a 10 song project as well. So yeah.
When you're writing normally, though, like say before COVID, you just had your normal writing schedule, you know, because obviously if you're out performing.
I don't know. If I call it a schedule.
Guilty.
Guilty. You know what? COVID made me more disciplined. It did make me more disciplined about writing. But at the same time, I will say this. I wasn't motivated in any way before that, to really buckle down and really do. I was writing, but I wasn't like, I wasn't consistent. I had done a couple of singles up to that point. Over the years, I put out like, 2 albums prior and maybe about 6 or 7 singles prior to what I'm working on now. And, you know, and I had, it was sporadic, but this last year made me a lot more consistent with my writing, you know, although I write all the time, you know what I'm saying? Here and there, little ideas, snippets, this and that, but like to really get into being, diligent about recording and being, you know, really putting together like full and fleshing out real ideas into songs, full songs. Yeah, COVID gave me the opportunity to really do it, you know. It was a matter of the time, having the time, really.
Did you think more writing singles, like, okay, I have an idea for a song, I'm going to write this, record it, and you would just write the songs as a single piece? Or did you think, or do you think now differently? Do you think more album, like I have a story, I want these songs to tell the story? Or do you write, do you think in single, do you think in singles, or do you think in albums now?
I always think in singles. I think that each song stands alone because I never know whether it's going to be for me or for somebody else. Yeah, because I don't know, you know, because sometimes it's a story that belongs to me. Sometimes it's a story that will belong to somebody else. Sometimes it's a story that's better told by me. Sometimes it's a story better told by somebody else.
Do you write the song and then go, okay, this is for someone else? Or do you go, I'm going to write a song for that person?
I write it and then it takes on a life of its own. And if it sounds like something I need to say, then it's for me to say. If it sounds like it doesn't work for me, like, what are you talking about, old lady? Then, yeah, no. Because I've got some songs I think that would work for maybe a younger artist, you know, or maybe a artist that's in a different place in life, or maybe a guy, you know. I don't know.
I have an idea for the next Carmen L. Miller concept album.
Mark's want to draw the line? No.
Here it is. This is the greatest. I'm telling you, this will go diamond. I'm telling you right now. It's called Looks Like Him, Sounds Like Me. I'm telling you right there. That's the album. Diamond.
Yes. You know what? Yeah, all my kids go cameo on it.
That's right. Now, I just want to let you know that seeing as how, and there's going to be a whole lot of people hearing this, so I have witnesses in many countries. I want 5 points on this album. I'm just saying right now, I need 5 points.
You know what? I'll send out a contract as far as, the label will send out a contract and see works out.
Okay, just remember to send out the contract for the 10 points that we agreed upon.
I heard you say 2.5 is what I heard you say.
Yes, 2 times 10 is 20. The 20 points.
No, but what happened was when you said 1 point on the album, I was okay with that.
Yeah, I said 30 points.
I was okay with the 0.5. And then, you know, but the longer we talk.
All I'm saying is that the next musical artist that I interview, all I'm going to say is I'm handing them the concept and I'm going to get my 40 points and that'll be the end of that.
Really? Up front? Really? Okay. Oh, wow.
And again, I know how show business is. After the first 2 million are sold, I'll owe 40 points. I'm like, how the hell did that happen?
Right. No, everything will be on what they call the back end.
how do I owe $9,000? What the hell? Oh, 90,000. How?
And those are recoupable costs. Costs.
When I found out what that was, I found out about that a long time ago. When I found out what that was, I'm going, hold it a second. You're the multi-billion dollar company, and I owe you $2 million.
That is the reason why I remain in this industry.
As you should.
That's the reason I remain in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember some big time artists that I saw on YouTube, and they were going, "If I was starting out today, there's no way in hell."
No,
sign one of those contracts.
And see, the thing is, too, here's what I love about today. Today is easy, or it's easier to get heard by the audience than ever before because of people like you and shows like this. Because you have the opportunity to have, you know, just grassroots people getting to know you and becoming a part of your movement and just really, really, you know, buying into the experience. And that's what I really love. And that's why I wouldn't have it any other way. Some people think that, you know, fame and riches is what success looks like in music. For me, it's finding people who love what I love and sharing it.
I think you're going to have the fame. I don't know about the riches, especially after my 60 points on the album.
No, what happened at the point where you said 0.25, I was cool, and I just said that we was gonna talk about it.
Wow. Wow. You're turning into one of them industry people. I knew it.
No, because what you didn't know is I'm a retired financier.
Oh, then you have no problem setting up the 75 points that I'm getting off that album. You can take care of that right there.
That's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is the album is going to be shelved.
That's all right. I'll be waiting right out. I have like a chair set up. I'll be sitting outside.
Until we can work out something.
All right.
We'll
74 points. That's my final offer.
0.74?
Oh, I'll be honest with you. That's more than a lot of artists are getting.
Let me tell you. Yeah.
Hey, remember when those CDs used to cost $25?
<You know? laughs> Oh, my God.
CDs were like,
and you know what? What's crazy is, like, now those are collector's items. That shit is crazy. That's so crazy to me.
I just wish that they would figure out a way to pay more for the streams that the singers are.
Yeah, and streaming is insane. You can stream, you can get thousands of streams and get like $2. It's stupid.
You need millions of streams. You need like $7,000. Yeah, still 20 million streams. Hey, here's your $2,000. What?
Right. That's exactly right. And because the thing about it too is streaming is only as good as what the audience is willing to buy into. Mm-hmm. So if they're willing to buy into the music, if they're willing to buy into you as an artist, then you start getting endorsements, you start getting the product placement type deals and things like that. You'll start getting like ad deals and things like that. That's where you'll see your YouTubers and things like that making money as artists. You're not making money on the streams, not at all.
And you're on YouTube too.
Yes.
And I also saw, when I was looking around, I saw you on, and I'm now following you on, even though I don't use it for myself, TikTok.
Yes. My TikTok, my Instagram, follow me on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. Don't follow me on Twitter because it's a little spicy. Unless you're political.
Yeah,
if you're political, follow me. If you're not,
I'm gonna follow you on Twitter. So just let you know.
Okay, so I mean, you know, I'm just saying.
Well, I'm friends with you on Facebook.
I'm just saying. No, it's totally different. I promise you.
Yeah, you know,
my Facebook friends can't follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, because did you? Did you notice? Because I paid more attention to Facebook during the pandemic than I ever did. And man, people are telling on themselves.
I lost more Facebook friends during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay because I stayed at a steady 5,000. It was cool because the trash took itself out. Shut up, Tom. No, but for real, it was bad. It was really a bad time in terms of the social climate. You know what I'm saying?
And
it was very revealing, and I'm kind of glad we've gone through this because it was a soul purging for me. Mm-hmm. Okay, it really was, like, for real. And it was quite revealing.
I heard the toilet flush sound a whole bunch of times when I had to get rid of people.
As a matter of fact, I lost one of my bands during COVID. Yeah. I played in a band. I played in a band called Aftermath, and I quit.
Yeah.
It was the Breonna Taylor situation for me.
Oh, how can you have the opposite side of that?
Exactly. At the point where you can't see my humanity and what it would look like for me as a Black woman in that situation, then we can't have civil conversations about anything, really.
I had to hit the eject button on a few people that I knew for years, and I broke bread with them.
Yes. Like, I mean, these were people I considered like almost family, and it hurt my heart. And I really it was revealing, and it was eye opening. It was very it was heart-wrenching for me because I think that one of the things that 2020 showed me on a almost cellular level was that there are people in this world who have zero empathy. And without that, it is impossible to really relate on any level. Like, I don't keep people like that in my life. I can't.
I'm not even exaggerating. There was a couple times I literally had the pointer over the friend button to unfriend, and I remember it was somebody that I liked. Actually, not so. It was a few people that I liked a whole lot. And I knew them since I was a kid, 17. And I'm sitting there, and it's like, I literally was like, there was a part of me that it was almost like my finger to hit the keyboard or to hit the little the touchpad to get rid of them.
Yeah.
It was like my finger didn't want to do it. And I said, you know what? I got to let me scroll down one more time. And then I scrolled down and went, oh, no. Click.
I had to reread what I thought. Am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? And then there's the other thing was, you know, there's a real cognitive dissonance in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real and I have to sound the alarm here because we talked about this before. I'm the huge history buff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm concerned about is that we're sitting in a real precarious place. Because Hitler lost an election too.
Mm-hmm.
And came back and became one of the most devastating dictators in history.
Mm-hmm.
Because his people lied in wait for his triumphant return.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And right now, I fear that we have a tendency to become too complacent with small victories, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And not protect what we consider freedom. And we don't learn the lessons of the past because we refuse to look at it honestly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's like you. It's like people that mow the lawn and think the lawn's going to stay mowed.
Exactly. Exactly. And here's, and it may not be, it may not be Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be him, but there are people who believe what he believes, who are a lot more smarter and much more charismatic and much more savvy than
mm-hmm.
him,
mm-hmm.
who can use the lessons of manipulation and propaganda mm-hmm. that he has used and just turn the notch up on this climate and burn this thing to the ground.
Yeah, it's especially now when you can watch things happen minute by minute with social
media.
In
real time. And the thing about it is we're so hungry to be entertained mm-hmm. by everything, including what should be what news.
Mm-hmm.
We love the drama, the controversy and all of that. You know, so much so that something functional appears boring. Okay?
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how desensitized you can get.
Right. We love the dysfunction. We love the dysfunction of it. And we look at that as entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Until it affects us, right?
Yeah.
And that part is the part that scares me. Because at the end of the day, the us that it will affect will be everyone deemed other.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the other.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
We're the great other, you know? And that's the part that's really disheartening and I'm not so much fearful, but concerned, extremely concerned.
Yeah. Well, the thing I noticed is that, and I remember I was watching, I remember a long time ago, I mean, like it's gotta be 30 years. I remember when you would see on the news, like a guy getting punched in the face and knocked out, it would horrify you.
Yeah.
I remember watching the guy get just punched in the face. And in fact, the news would stop the film when the fist was heading toward the face. They wouldn't show the guy. They'd show him about the punch, and then they show the guy on the ground and they blur it out. And now you literally, they'll show you the whole punch, the kick into this and that. And they kind of have to because in their mind, because it's online raw. And I see people putting laugh emojis.
I'll tell you what's the litmus for me. In my parents' generation, the catalyst for Vietnam
mm-hmm.
was the monk that burned himself alive that was caught
mm-hmm.
in that picture in Life magazine, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Do you understand that today that could play on Facebook without being censored in any way?
Yeah. I mean,
in real time, that could play on Facebook without being censored in any way. And people wouldn't bat an eye. Mm. People wouldn't bat an eye. And that's how far we've gone. And that's how far we've fallen, I think, and devolved in terms of society. So I think that there's something to be said for finding our way back mm-hmm. as far as empathy. And I posted something earlier today on Facebook, and I really meant this. What my post was, and I got to go back to it just to kind of share it with your audience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
I said, let's start a conversation about civility, respect, and common decency. We've become such an insular society that compassion is being lost in the translation. The days of I, me, and my have eroded our sense of brotherhood. Too many people are afraid of anything and anyone deemed other than like themselves. We need a new love language common to humanity. Mm-hmm. And that's something I really feel strongly about. I do.
It's weird. And as a person who's a little older, I was just astounded by the fact that little niceties that I was raised to give to people,
yeah,
are deemed. I'll be honest with you. I go to I'm in the hood, hanging with some old friends. We go to one of those Chinese food stores. Do they have them in Ohio like that? Like the corner Chinese food stores.
Yeah, but not as odd. I think more like in Cleveland, more your or Columbus, that type of place.
But you know what? I'm referring to, correct?
Yeah.
So I go into the place, and the people are like, they want to buy loose cigarettes for like a quarter. So instead of giving first of all, it's illegal. But instead of just giving the guy the quarter, hey, let me get Lucy. Yo, man, let me get one of those. And he just kind of, that little, he just bounced it under the glass, and the guy's like, don't throw the. I walk up to the guy. I order something really quickly. He hooks it up. I say, hey, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, my man. And we're having a little conversation. And he was so shocked that I was talking to him like a human being, which is what he is.
Right.
He literally, I opened my bag up and I thought he put somebody else's order in it. Right? So I walk back and go, I said, no, I just ordered a hamburger. You gave me I got a hamburger and I think you put somebody else's chicken and french fries and the soda in there. He goes, no. That's for you.
Oh, wow.
I'm sitting there going, I felt bad, but he was like, no, I want you to take it. And I'm sitting there going, all I said was, we had like a little pleasant conversation. I'm telling you, the whole conversation was 20 seconds.
Seriously. You know what? And those kinds of interactions are rare anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad that they are. And what's crazy is, okay, so you're from Philly. I'm from Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, I was raised to treat people with that kind of respect. Mm-hmm. I was raised to, and I raised my kids the same way. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I come from the hood of hood. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I
can relate.
If I already tell you, no, I'm talking about, I come from the Chambers Brothers YBI hood. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm coming to Pony Down, all of that. I come from the hood. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I tell you though that we were raised to have manners and respect and to treat people, the janitor, the same as you would treat the CEO, mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that is lost in the translation anymore, And what's crazy is, I've always told my kids the same thing, and my kids have come up with kids who haven't been taught that, mm-hmm. And to see that, and they've come up with kids who didn't come from two parent homes, and they come up with kids who and that kind of thing. So that it's a different world for them than it was for me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And even and even with the kids that I came up with weren't necessarily from two parent homes and things like that, but there was still a different sense of community that has been lost now. Everybody's, don't touch mine. You can't, don't tell my child nothing, this, that, and the third, mm-hmm. But it used to be, everybody in the neighborhood could tell you and then tell your mama. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
The sense of community has been lost. The sense of unity has been lost. And, little common decency and manners and things like that. people call what people call political correctness, we used to just call it manners, good manners, you know?
Yeah, because the motivation was different.
Right. There's just certain things you didn't talk about. You didn't talk about your salary. You didn't talk about your politics. You didn't talk about your religion in polite company. You know what I'm saying? Mm. There were just certain things you didn't talk about because you did not, there were conflicts that you didn't want to have, right? And it's not that you're not, you don't have opinions about those things. It's just that, you know, you don't start none and won't be none, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now everybody's so confrontational now because you hide behind the anonymity of the internet and, you know, everybody is Willie Big Nuts behind the screen. Mm-hmm. You know, they say whatever they want to say, and then you get out in public and your kids is acting all crazy, you know what I'm saying, because it heard you say everything you want to say. And it's like the Wild West out here.
All my social media has my actual face on it. So when I said it, I said it.
Me too. I said what I said. That's me.
I got the kick out of it.
That's why y'all can't follow me on Twitter. Because
it's like, the only reason I had my Facebook temporarily private was not because I was cared about somebody attacking me. Because if you want to bring it, you get what you get. But the thing was, people started realizing he's either going to ignore me or he's going to verbally cut my head off. So I'm just going to attack his friends. So that's what
I'm
they started
gonna
doing.
I'm just going to be real with y'all. I'm just going to be real with y'all. Mm-hmm. For those of y'all who would like to keep, if you would like to keep being cool with me, mm-hmm. And if we have come from a different political stripe,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to suggest that y'all just leave my Twitter alone and just go on head on about your business.
Yeah, because
y'all,
it's like, oh, they came for me on Twitter.
Y'all gonna lose your job playing with me on Twitter.
Yeah, I had a couple people, come driving at me on Twitter. And the funny thing about it is I've been on Twitter for like 11 years.
Yes.
I was like, I don't care. You know what I mean?
You know what? So I kind of judge my age by my social media. Mm-hmm. And I used to be Instagram years old. Because mm-hmm. I said that was the last social media I was going to get until I became TikTok years old, because I'm rolling the clock back on myself and I'm still cute.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to tell you what, I've been on Twitter darn near since the inception. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell y'all what, Twitter plays entirely too much. Twitter allows people to play entirely too much.
Mm-hmm.
They really do.
Do you know what would happen if you had to put your real face, on Twitter, and Twitter actually, like, say you had to sign up where the company knew who you are?
Uh-huh.
Oh, all of this crap. Because people, when people come attack, the thing about it is they troll you, but okay. I'm hard to troll because I don't care. So 100%. You ain't nothing but a dude, you know, and I'm like, I don't even respond to him.
The thing that people really don't realize about me is I'm in the second act of my life. Mm-hmm. I work because I want to, not because I have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't scare me. Mm-hmm. You cannot scare me.
It's just
my phrase is play if you want to.
It just amazes me when I see people get so upset when someone calls them a name or something, and I just, you know, like every once in a while, I'll take out the hatchet and chop somebody's arm off, metaphorically speaking. But it's very rare, and I only do that if I'm using them to make an example out of them. But the majority of time, it's like, let's be honest, if you hit the mute,
it's, you know,
game
what?
Set match.
I will tell you this. They get cute on TikTok too, and it's very easy to block and mute people on TikTok too.
Mm-hmm.
which is very, that feature is my favorite. Because here's the thing, that's why I don't understand so much of the vitriol and so much of the rancor that goes on social media. Because it's just as easy to block or mute. Mm-hmm. It's just as easy. If you, and I'm not going to lie to you, my piece requires an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. It does. At certain times in my life, I can accept having a mutual discourse that is productive. I can accept a productive discourse or debate that is about, actually hearing one another. Mm-hmm. And that is based in real ideas, facts, and real, like, of solution oriented. I'm mm-hmm. a Capricorn. I'm a solution oriented person. I don't live in a problem. I don't live in a debate. I live in solutions. Okay. If you're looking for a solution to something, let's say we're having an issue, for example, whatever it is that has to do with race, gender bias, any type of whatever the discourse is. If you're looking for a solution and we're having a discussion, we can do that all day. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if all you want to do is back and forth, I will cut you off so quick.
Mm-hmm.
I cut you off so quick. You'll be talking to yourself all day long. You'll be looking at the wall. You understand me?
Hey, you're a Capricorn. So that's the trait of the Capricorn?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm very solution-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Well, guess what sign I am? Scorpio.
Who are you? Oh, my God.
So how do you think that's going to go with people?
Yeah. You're just going to cut them off.
Exactly.
You're going to cut them off before they start. They're going to be talking to a wall from jump.
The thing that people don't understand is I'm cool with everybody, but once you get to the point where I realize that having you around is going to be toxic, I will chop you off so fast and feel nothing.
Yeah, and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. If it's not productive, I'm good. I'm so good. I guess that's what drew me to finance initially was like, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense.
I got to find out about this before we go, because I need to know about the whole finance thing.
I was an investment banker for 15 years.
Oh, good.
I did investment. What? Well,
what do you think about, since I got it, you're out of there? Are you still doing it?
No, I retired, probably about 6 years ago.
Okay. So I gotta ask you this. This I'll let you go after this, but I got to get this.
Crypto.
What do you think?
You're gonna ask me about crypto.
Not just crypto. I was gonna ask you about crypto last. Crypto is last. Because I just what I wanted to know, because what do you think about Robinhood and Cash App and these fractional stocks?
Well, here's the thing. I think that this is a way that the markets get away with dumping a lot of penny stock and a lot of smaller investment capital into the marketplace. I think it's a big dump, but it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing for smaller investors. It's not a bad thing for people who are looking to get their feet wet in the market. In terms of those people who are looking for a way into investing, who wouldn't necessarily be able to afford to do it. However, be careful with your disposable income. Be careful with your disposable income because it is a gamble. Just like anything, just like the markets themselves, it's a gamble. If I were to advise someone, I would say never play with what you can't afford to lose, period.
Mm-hmm.
point okay. blank period. Because at the end of the day, we are looking at, we're for the last 7 years, we've been on borrowed time when it comes to recession. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we are borrowing ourselves into a pit. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this can be a good thing for those who buy debt, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in buying debt, and if you can afford to buy debt, cool. However, it also can be like a real whirlwind. If you can't afford to stay in the markets for a long term, and by long term, I mean upwards of 10 years or more, mm-hmm. okay? If you can't afford to stay in the market for upwards of 10 years or more, then you probably want to just, you know, look into just saving or instrument like an annuity or something like that. ETFs are okay. Mutual funds are okay. Just make sure that whatever you do get into, that it's being traded well by people who know exactly what they're doing, who've been doing it for a long time. I would recommend something like a Vanguard or something like you know, just something with a good track record. But I just I'm not really all that fond of the I'm not really fond of the platform. That's all. That's just me.
Because I was looking at that, and I was watching the television commercial, and it was from mm-hmm. Schwab, I think it was, and they were stock mm-hmm. slices for $5.
Well, here's the thing too. You can always use there, and this is if that's something that you are interested in, I will tell you the place where I would actually look at doing something like that. There's a app called Stash. Mm-hmm. And they actually do small ETFs where you can buy into ETFs with like a small piece of an ETF with small amounts.
Yeah, because I was
and they have
this,
and right. they actually make investing easy because they actually have tried and true ETFs and mutual funds, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that platform a lot more than the other. Okay.
Yeah, because that was that because I saw all of the whole Robinhood and the Reddit, all that kind of crap going on, and I started I was like, oh God, what's going on here with the pumping the stocks and dumping and, you know, playing around with it, manipulating it. And I was like, hey,
well, man. Now I will say this. Now that whole thing that happened with GameStop and Reddit, that was just good market time, and a group of people got together and did what the banks do. The banks do it all the time.
I wish I had found out about it earlier.
It was simply great market timing, and they're investigating it. And I'm saying, you know, people pump and dump all the time. The banks run up game all the time, and it happens. You know, now if it's done on purpose and if it was collectively manipulated, then you could be looking at something that's collectively criminal. But mm-hmm. I mean, if it was just the coincidence where everybody happened to do what they did, then, you know, there you go.
Well,
get in where you fit in. Get in where you fit in. You know?
Now, before we go, gotta get the crypto thing going. What in the blue hell? I don't know if this is a bad thing to say, but I'm like, hell no.
So, what everybody's talking about, the Dogecoin and all of that good stuff, here's what happens, and here's what we're looking at. There are currencies, that are basically, they're basically like, for lack of a better term, cyber coinage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Used on platforms like gaming platforms or retail platforms or different apps for purchasing and trading and that kind of thing. And what is happening is they are replacing actual funds on these apps and platforms. If they're being traded on these apps and platforms in place of actual funds.
Mm-hmm.
Investing actual funds into these currencies is what gives them value. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, by investing into crypto like Bitcoin, you give it value in the marketplace where it's traded. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our money and other commodities props up Bitcoin. Bitcoin is traded across all kinds of platforms, be it gaming platforms, be it commodities trading platforms, the Bitcoin trading platforms, the different, it's actually bought and sold, just like currency, like the US dollar. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So money all over the world props it up and gives it its value. Okay. However much is invested in it is what it's worth and how it grows. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just like any of these other, crypto. Okay. So as they are creating new platforms for these things. For example, this Dogecoin or Dogecoin, I don't necessarily know the terminology or whatever, but I am invested.
Mm-hmm. You've got Doge.
Oh, yeah.
And Bitcoin?
Yeah.
A little snippet there, a little slice there.
Okay, so. What happens is the more people invest, the value goes up, you know, just like any other traded commodity and just like anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And its value basically is going to be manipulated by what it's used for. For example, Elon Musk says he's sending Doge to the moon, right? He's going to use it to create this rocket, right? And that's what he's spending it on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a purchase that's being made with it. So this is actually it's being put into use in the marketplace. So the more it's being used in the marketplace, the more it'll have value, okay? So these are also things that can go on for the long term. I think that in terms of cryptos, it makes sense to pay attention to what it's used for, what props it up, how it's manipulated, how it's used. And just in terms of the marketplace for it, where you're seeing it in the marketplace, and make some decisions based on that, whether you want to become part of it or not.
Now, here's my final question.
Yeah.
Are you going to give me my 80 points in Dogecoin or Bitcoin?
No, what's going to happen is it's going to be in Concoin.
I want it in Ether.
You're going to get it in Concoin instead of CC.
Okay, I have to have my lawyer call you up and discuss this whole situation here.
Yeah, right now it's at a premium. set a premium. We're giving them away with the album.
We're gonna have to talk about this next time I have you on the show, because this is not going well for me.
I'm telling you, in a few years, current coins to the moon.
Can't believe it, man. I did not realize I had a former investment banker sitting here setting me up, trying to jack me for my 95 points on the album. This is ridiculous.
I'm saying, current coin to the moon. No, I'm just saying, you know, what's so supreme about it is that you could get in on the ground floor.
I don't know, man. After hearing about your record deal, I don't, the way you're trying to set me up, not giving me my 98 points.
I'm just saying, you could get in on the ground floor of this current coin, homie.
I knew you were going to wait to the end of the daggone show to try to jack me. See, you would have done that earlier, I would have hung up on you.
See, you know what? You ain't a believer. That's all right. Watch, in 2 years, this thing blowing up.
That's all I know is my lawyer's going to have to talk to you. My friend, Carmen?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed talking to you. And I knew I was going to, I had talked to you before, so I knew I was going to enjoy talking to you anyway, but thank you for coming on. And I'm going to want to have you come back on, and the whole show will not be a conversation. We'll just have to, the next episode we have together will be just nothing but negotiating my 99.3.7 points on the album.
Okay, so 0.07 points is what you're down to now. Dang, you are so generous.
Well, I can already see now that our next episode will be going to be like 6 hours.
Oh my God. I appreciate you so much for having me on. I do. Thank you.
It was really a pleasure talking to you.
And thank you for supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will talk. We will do this again on a later date after I do some more research, so I can set you up and get my 99.9% of the album.
0.001 is cool with me, and if you're okay with that, you are a gem. That's
you can't
good.
Slip nothing by nobody. Even when they ain't an investment bank anymore, you can't slip nothing past them.
Okay.
Take care, Carmen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, y'all. Yeah, bye-bye. All right, now that was fun, wasn't it? Told you. What did I tell you? Have I failed you yet? No. Will I fail you? Also, no. Thanks again for all your support. Much love to everybody, and I'll see you again next time. Take care.